Episode 54, Mary Poppins, Jack of All Accents. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 150,000 downloadable titles to choose from. For listeners of the Animation Addicts podcast, Audible is giving you a free one-month trial so you can test out their incredible service for yourself. One book that I would recommend is P.L. Travers' Mary Poppins. This is the original book series that the Mary Poppins Disney film is based upon. There are 8 books in total, and Audible, you can listen to the majority of them. There are a lot of deviations from the original source material, so if you want to find out what Mary Poppins is really all about, definitely go check out these books. So again, for your free one-month trial, go to rotoscopers.com/audible.
All right, folks, step right up. My name is Bert the Chimney Sweep. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. We got to Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. As you can tell, I have no idea what a British accent sounds like. I'm going to pass this off to my good chum, Mason Smith.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you. Let's all give him a... We've had Bert the Chimney Sweep and then Vincent Van Gool last year. We've had Brock Pearson from Monsters University. What's next? Anyway, Mason Smith here with the Rotoscopers gang, and I'm here with my lovely co-host Morgan Stradling.
Hello.
Yeah, and unfortunately Chelsea isn't here for this episode, but just know she isn't sick or anything. Save your get well cards. This episode that we are doing today is actually the result of a request from one of our Rotoscopers writers. That's writers with an R. He's a fan of animation. He's one of our writers. We love him lots. His name is Blake Taylor. Blake, say hello to the folks.
What up?
All right. Such style. Before we introduce Blake a little bit more, I'm just going to explain what the show is all about. So we are the Rotoscopers, and this is our Animation Addicts podcast. So what we do is basically you can visualize it. Picture 3 people who love animation sitting down and discussing all things animation. So production, marketing, technique, technical specs.
Don't forget songs.
Oh, songs, voice actors, kooky characters, all kinds of wacky voices. And we have a lot of fun doing it, as you can tell. We are well past our 50th episode. We're just a podcast that loves animation. And if you love it and you want to discuss it with us, then tune in because we love our listeners and we love what we do.
So for this episode, we are doing Mary Poppins,
ooh,
which we will talk about a little bit later. Well, I guess we're breaking tradition because this is the first technically non-animated film that we have done, and we've always been strictly animation. We are no respecter of studios. We do all the studios, but Mary Poppins has a very nice and lovely animated segment. It's one of these, you know, films that have both animation and live action. And so we thought for that reason, why not? It's such a fantastic movie. Let's do it. And so we are, it's a red letter day that we are doing Mary Poppins, our first live action movie.
A red letter day, a coup d'etat to coin the Norman phrase.
Yeah, Mary Poppins has been mentioned many times on like lists for greatest movie ever. And I think everyone would agree it's a really good film, and it's like very well loved and cherished. And so, yeah, the animation sequences in this film aren't like the big deal with the film, but they kind of enhance it and like complement it. And so I have no problem reviewing this film.
And it was a request of Blake. So, Blake, how come you wanted to do this movie? Mm-hmm. Out of all the movies available, why Mary Poppins?
Well, it probably is my favorite Disney movie. I always go back and forth between this and Toy Story. But I really think this is for different layers of the movie that we'll get into later. But I think what makes this film so different from all the other, you know, typical Disney 60s live action movies is that, yes, it does have animation in it. And yes, that is a very brief part of it. But the overall tone of the movie very much feels like an animated film. And I think even today, like, it still sort of sits comfortably on the shelf alongside the, you know, official animated canon from Feature Animation or whatever, even though it technically isn't part of that lineup. But it feels like an animated movie, and that's what I'm looking forward to discussing today.
Good points. Yeah, that's true. It's very eccentric So we have a few little announcements. We're not going to be doing a new segment in this episode because we can't wait to get to the main discussion. I know all you are chomping at the bit, waiting to get to the Mary Poppins sequence and section, so we will get to that. But we want to make a few announcements. So for those of you who don't know, we were nominated for a podcast award in the category of movies/film. And so voting was during the first 2 weeks of November, and we don't know the results, so hopefully, fingers crossed, everything turns out. We'll find out at the New Media Expo in January whether we got the final award or not. And one of the sites that Blake writes for, WW Radio, was actually nominated again. They've basically won it every year since their inception, right?
Pretty much in the travel category. They usually always get it.
And they're super high quality, great, fantastic show that they put out. You know, Lou Mangiello's the main host. So, you know, I hope they win. I hope a lot of our other animation and Disney fan sites, you know, take home the big award. So keep on the lookout for that. Yep. And speaking of awards, we are going to be doing the Rotoscopers Awards, something new that we are doing on the site. And this will be a part of our Best of 2013 show. So you may remember last year, the very last episode of the year was kind of a culmination of our favorite episodes and quotes and lines and discussions that we had. And so it was really fun just to listen to those top moments. This will be the same, but we will add to it. So we'll also have your favorite Rotoscopers moments. And then we're also going to be having these Rotoscopers Awards. So starting December 1st, we are going to open voting so you can vote for your favorite animated film of the year, favorite sidekick, favorite female voice actor, best animation, best song, best, you know, even things as a site specific as best opinion piece. Like some of these are going to be really fun art, and it's just a way to get everyone involved so we can all see what the Rotoscopers community says about animation in 2013.
That's so exciting. We have a community, and I crown myself community king.
All right, Mason has stolen the crown, but that's okay. So just a reminder, if you have a favorite episode that maybe you go back and listen to, let us know. Any episode after and including episode 30, which was a Goofy movie, on through, you know, all the episodes that have come after, these are eligible for the Best of 2013 show. So if you have your favorite moments, be sure to call in to the voicemail line, which is you can go to rotoscopers.com/voicemail, or you can also call us on your cell phone at 406-646-6575 and just leave us a little call saying, hey, this is my favorite moment. Give us the episode and kind of what we were talking about, and we'll play that moment. And then also you can send us an email about it as well. So lots of cool stuff. So get ready. It's always a fun episode.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
All right. right, so we are moving on to our main discussion, which we've already kind of been talking about basically since the first 5 minutes of the show.
We just can't help ourselves.
Exactly. It is Walt Disney's Mary Poppins, which came out in 1964. It is, as we've mentioned, contains both live action and animated sequences, and is still today one of the most beloved Disney movies of all time.
Yeah, totally. 1964 was a good year for Godzilla, but it was also a really good year for Disney. You should never underestimate Mary Poppins because financially, it was a huge hit. I think it was Disney's number one moneymaker. It was the top grossing Disney film for 20 years.
Wow.
Well, granted, that was pre-Renaissance stuff that it was better than for so many years. But yeah, for 20 years, folks, my first thought about this film is that it was made during an era when actors and actresses in films were good performers and good actors. So take Dick Van Dyke in this film. He's a great actor, unless you count his British accent. But he also sings. He dances. He performs in this film. And so I kind of miss that kind of golden age of film, you know, Hollywood film, when actors and actresses, when they were cast, they were also expected to be performers. That's the first thing I want to say about this film, is that there's great performance in it. But it's also, I don't know, when I was a kid, I had mixed feelings because this was one of those films that I thought was incredibly long and boring.
Yes.
Okay, am I not, I know I'm not the only person that thought this.
No, I loved this movie growing up, but it never ended.
Exactly. You know how when you were a kid and things, there were certain films and certain things that just never ended?
Mary Poppins was one of them.
To me, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang lasts forever. I don't even remember any of the movie except the crazy, creepy lollipops guy and the toy soldiers that come to life. But I digress. So yeah, this is a top-notch film from an adult perspective. You know, when people on IMDb write a mini review about how when they were 5 years old, they really loved the performance and the depth of this film, I'm like, you are a liar. You did not enjoy this film when you were six or seven years old, because it seemed to last forever.
They're just that much more refined than us.
But yeah, this is a great film. It's based on a book series, which I didn't know until I did my research recently. According to my research, it's based on a book series which lasted from 1934 to 1988. Wow, way to go.
And I've never read one of them.
I've never read one of them.
I've always wanted to. My brother read them, and he says it's completely different from the movie, obviously, which is important to talk about. The upcoming film, Saving Mr. Banks, is based on the story of Walt Disney trying to get the rights to the Mary Poppins series or novels, which was written by P.L. Travers. And she was very hesitant and against the idea of Walt Disney, who, you know, made children's, you know, gushy, fluffy films, taking her characters and destroying them, basically. So even as early as 1938, he had been trying to get the rights from her. And finally, in 1961, she gave him the rights. And people think maybe the reason was because of declining book sales. That finally she was like, oh, crap, you know, she was strapped for cash and needed some money and finally gave him the rights and still apparently was never satisfied with the final film.
Yeah, reports are was that she hated how the film turned out, which is like, okay, I already know the ending to Saving Mr. Banks. Mm-hmm. they don't save Mr. Banks. I'm just kidding. But
which, since she reportedly was unsatisfied, I'm really curious as to kind of the story of how she then gave them the rights again to do it for the stage, like, how, you know, 30 years later, like, what's that story too? I just think, you know, it's kind of curious her whole persistence on, you know, how her characters were treated.
Well, yeah, and considering how this was such a beloved movie and still is, you think maybe it would grow on her after, you know, 30 years here in the 80s, 90s, and then they later approach her to do a musical. But considering this was her creation and her baby, she probably still was offended that it turned out the way it did. But yeah.
Now, I read online that to secure the rights for the Broadway version of Mary Poppins, they resurrected Walt Disney out of cryostasis, you know, because they froze him.
Oh my gosh.
And he actually talked to her again as icy zombie Walt Disney.
That's the real story, and then
he marched off to Cuba, and I forgot what happened after that, if they caught him. But so yeah, we got the Broadway, we got the film. Actually, the Most Film from the Soviet Union actually adapted it again in 1984 as a film, but I unfortunately have not been able to see that movie.
I had no idea that version existed.
Moscow, dun 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 dun. A little bit of trivia here. Apparently, according to the internet discussions going on, there are two camps. One is that Mary Poppins is a witch and that she should be burned accordingly. And that the other is that Mary Poppins is a fairy, not like a Tinkerbell fairy, but a whatchamacallit fairy, like a old school Saxon lore type of fairy. Meaning that she's benevolent, but she has magical powers. I really think it's the same thing. She's not a muggle, that's for sure. The whole, metaphysical anatomy of Mary Poppins is a little complicated when you try to define her. I'm fine with calling her a witch because we're fine with calling Hermione Granger a witch. But, I don't know, do you guys think that she's a witch, a fairy? Does it even matter?
I like to think she kind of probably, reports to some organization or something like that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
Do you think Mary Poppins and Nanny McPhee belong to the same witches organization of nannies who do magic?
You know, the similarities I've never seen Nanny McPhee, but from what I have seen of trailers in different parts, I'm a bit suspicious. I'm like,
Well, here's the deal with Nanny McPhee and Mary Poppins. Nanny McPhee, recap for our listeners. She magically comes to your house. She appears as an ugly and physically desirable old hag, basically. And you couldn't possibly love her, but the more you learn to love her, the more beautiful she becomes. And so eventually at the end of the movie, the children learn about love and respect for their elders. And she becomes a beautiful woman, it's like, oh, look how beautiful you were, because that's who you were inside, but we didn't see that, so that's what was reflected on your outside. So it was like, at the end of the movie, they needed Nanny McPhee, but at the end of Mary Poppins, which I don't know if we should say this till the end, but I felt like Mary Poppins, they didn't really need Mary Poppins, they just needed to, they just needed her, it was really about the father needing to reprioritize his life. Because if you notice, I'm just going to jump to the last scene here, before Let's Go Fly a Kite, Mr. Bank, Mrs. Banks, and the children, they just run out the door and don't even look back at Mary Poppins. Because they don't need her anymore, they have each other. Right. And so Mary Poppins, having done her wicked bidding, flies off with the west wind. And so I think that's a difference, but there are some similarities. Personally, I like the relationships dynamic with Nanny McPhee a little bit better, although I think that Mary Poppins is a better movie, and that's my official statement.
And I just thought of this coincidence that Emma Thompson plays Nanny McPhee and P.L. Travers.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. Coincidence? I think not. So anyway, I think what a lot of people like about Mary Poppins are the characters. First of all, the indomitable Julie Andrews cast as Mary Poppins. And there was a bit of a story about that, about her casting, right?
Okay, so originally she was up for the role of Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. This was a role that she had originated on Broadway, and she was getting ready to do that in on film. But it ended up going to Audrey Hepburn instead. There was a stipulation in her contract that if she got cast as Eliza, then they would hold production back. But it ended up being that she wasn't, so she was able to be cast as Mary Poppins.
At the Oscars, who won the Oscar for Best Actress? Was it her? Was Julie Andrews?
I've got it right here. Oh, yeah. Academy Award for the Best Actress in a Leading Role goes to Julie Andrews.
Yes. Okay, so she won for that, but her acceptance speech, she got up there and she said, I would like to thank everyone involved in this film, and especially the one man who made it all possible. And of course, you would expect her to say Walt Disney, but the crowd erupts with laughter when she says Jack Warner, who was responsible for My Fair Lady, because he didn't get her the part. So that was kind of her getting.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think in the grand scheme of things, Mary Poppins is a much more iconic role, and it allowed her to develop a little bit more. I mean, that was a role she had already done on Broadway. She would just be kind of rehashing what she did on film. And this was something new that she got to make her own. There wasn't a Broadway, version of this before. And so, I think Mary Poppins trumps My Fair Lady in the grand scheme of things. Although My Fair Lady is quite good.
Yeah.
Well, originally I was reading that we were talking about Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Angela Lansbury was originally one of the leading contenders for the role. And the thing about Angela Lansbury, like, even though I know in Bedknobs and Broomsticks she's young, she still looks old. There was, like, this thing in the 60s where gray hair was, like, the style for young women. Did you ever notice this? And it makes them look like they're 45, 50. It's not an attractive look. And so I can't see Angela Lansbury in this role, but yeah, I mean, it was just meant for Julie.
Well, there you have it, folks. But yeah, I think, so all over the internet you hear people arguing that in the books, Mary Poppins is a lot more cold and stern than in this film. But I don't think that Mary Poppins' character in this movie is exactly warm and loving, you know? She does have a bond with the children.
I am kind, but extremely firm.
Yeah, there you go. Because she doesn't put up with any crap, but she's also very poised, and she has very good etiquette and protocol. Sorry, Star Wars. You know, she has good manners, but at the same time, she doesn't give them what they want all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The whole song, We Love to Laugh, I thought for a second she would, I thought the whole time that she would start laughing and go up there too. Lose it.
She's very no-nonsense.
But she never does. She doesn't even break a smile in We Love to Laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, she makes them sad to get them down. Now that's pretty harsh.
I also love her line when, I think it sort of embodies what you were saying there, when Mr. Banks is very angry with her and he was like, Mary Poppins, would you explain the meaning of all this? And the only thing she says to him before she just walks away very curtly is, I never explain anything. And then she just walks on off.
Yeah.
Ooh, snap. Okay, for one, it's hard to not like Mary Poppins because she's just like she's like this like superhuman woman. Everyone apparently knows her and everybody loves her. And but she's, I'm starting to think that Disney needs, you know how they're doing Maleficent, they did Wicked. Mm. They should do like a backstory movie / production.
I know this is jumping the gun, but I talking about Bert and Mary, like they obviously know each other. They're friends, maybe even lovers. I have no idea. But I think a Mary Poppins Bert prequel, seeing, I don't know, I mean, what sort of lives they had, what was Mary Poppins' other things and duties that she does, would be fantastic and fascinating. I don't think it'll ever happen.
That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Just because I don't know. I mean, Disney has no shame in adapting some of its most prized properties.
They really don't.
So I'd be up for it if they got the right people.
Would you want it to still be
Angelina Jolie as Mary Poppins?
Do y'all think they would want to do it in the same style, like a musical, or just completely different direction?
I don't know. I want them to do a musical, because if they try one of those like epic, like, you know, the Oz the Great and Powerful kind of things, or like something like that, it's just going to be like really lame. You know, they're like fighting dragons, you know. Johnny Depp is Bert. Chim Chimaroo, mate. Why is the rum gone? But anyway, I don't know. I think it'd be cool, because a lot needs to be explained here. I don't know if they explain in the books, but like, who is the real Mary Poppins? She comes and goes like the wind, you know, but they should do a crossover film between Mary Poppins and Bedknobs and Broomsticks. That'd be cool.
I wonder if ABC would ever do her backstory on Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, because Mary Poppins isn't technically... I don't know. Would you consider her a piece of fairy tale folklore?
Well, they're kind of loose in who they use. Like, they've done Frankenstein before, so they're not strictly all grim fairy tale characters. So I think that's a perfect outlet for it, come to think of it.
That would be really, really cool. And what I love about Once Upon a Time, even though I've never seen it, it seems that this is like an alternate universe canon of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's like, so Mulan's in Once Upon a Time, but it doesn't affect her canonness of the animated films. So it's just like this alternate universe, which I'm happy that exists and they could do whatever they want there, but then official canon still remains the same.
Right.
That's pretty good. But now, Dick Van Dyke plays two characters in the film. First, the most notable one that he plays is Bert, the chimney sweep, all around good guy, charming Englishman. He's kind of got that weird role where he's like a narrator, but he's also in the film, you know, he like looks at the camera, Mr. Banks and stuff. And so, I think Bert's a cool guy. I have no problems with Bert. He's kind of a jack of all trades.
He is. He's always doing something different. One day he's, a musical artist playing basically every instrument imaginable. The next day he's a screech screamer. Next one, he's a chimney sweep. He just does, he needs his daily income, and he does what he does. and he's funny at it. And you were mentioning his accent, which I don't think I ever noticed when I was younger that he wasn't British, which shows my prowess at the British accent and differentiating real from fake.
Well, it's not that it's fake. It's just that, I don't know. Imagine if a British person did a intimidation of a cowboy. It would be like the most quintessential obnoxious cowboy accent ever, Western accent ever. And so I know that there are Englishmen and Englishwomen who talk like Bert does with the same accent. But I don't know. Going back to My Fair Lady, it's evident that there are like a ton of different accents in Great Britain, you know, even in London, you know. And so, I don't know. I don't think people were like, oh, that's a fake accent or it's not accurate. They might have been, although they might have been a little insulted by how generic it was, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I honestly don't really care, but I just think it's funny that the accent is so, you know, kind of, I don't know, broad.
Well, didn't you have a funny story about his teacher?
Yeah, so Dick Van Dyke's voice coach for the film was an Irishman, apparently. And the story goes that the Irishman had an even worse British accent that he taught Dick Van Dyke. And so if you're being taught by a person who does something horribly, then you're going to do it horribly. But so yeah, that's like a big story about how his voice came to be for Bert. And you know, when he's singing, it pops back into an American accent in some parts. It's a Jolly Holiday. So I don't know. Maybe it's inconsistency. I don't know.
Again.
But across the internet, it's just something that grinds people's gears, I guess.
He's a jack of all trades, including accents. Jack of all accents.
Jack of all accents. Now, my big question here is, and Morgan talked about this, was there romance between Mary and Bert?
See, that's the interesting question, because it's like very subtly, maybe kind of sort of hinted at. They get along very well. They know each other. They're very,
they're very comfortable being close to each other.
Yes, and especially in the Jolly Holiday sequence, where it is almost romantic in a way, where he's being the gentleman, he's singing about how fantastic she is and how she's the best woman of all the women.
Oh, yes.
And so it makes you think there's something here, and then it never resolves.
Yeah, and then there's, Mary talks about, she does her singing part on It's a Jolly Holiday, where she's talking about, oh, you're such a gentleman, you would never take advantage of our friendship, and stuff, and she goes on and on and on, and Bert's character kind of rolls his eyes. Yeah, he gets friend zoned. I hate that term, but so I think that there is kind of a flirty relationship there. But the point I'm trying to make is I guess the real question is, does there have to be a romance between Mary and Bert? My answer is no. I don't think there should be, but there seems to be something.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like that we don't know everything though.
I do too. And here's something that grinds my gears. I always go on to IMDb when we research these films. You know, number one internet movie database for me. Number one source for Mason Smith.
And basically 500 million other people in the world.
Yeah, and other people. IMDb is just so great. All hail the internets. But somebody started a discussion about does Mary Poppins even have a sexuality in this film? And because she apparently is not falling head over heels for Bert, and there's no like makeout scene, you know, in the film.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It's like, what a wonderful world we live in, to where, this is my brief social commentary for the day, but what a world we live in where it's like, hey, they're not like falling head over heels in love with each other. There must be something wrong with them.
I think it's, you know, definitely why, though, because even at the end when she flies away and he's like, don't stay way too long. I mean, that kind of, you know, she does this often, flies in, stays a while, does her job, and then heads on out.
Yeah. Well, maybe she's
more like a nun, where like she has a higher calling.
Yeah.
Than, being romantically involved. She has, which she does. She has to basically come in and save families from being destroyed either by the children or, you know, parents neglecting them. That's her calling in life. And so I think she doesn't allow herself to get romantically or emotionally involved, which she doesn't. When it's time to go, she goes. She's a little bit, she is sad, but she realizes her purpose is greater than some of the more trivial things, which apparently to her is romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, maybe in the prequel that Disney's going to do, we'll learn about how she did have a love interest. you know, but she makes a tough decision at the end between her job and her love, and she chooses her job.
Oh, I thought you were gonna make the comparison that she was hurt by someone long ago, sort of like Megara from Hercules. So she bowed off all
like
men.
That. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Hey, you know me. I'm not the Hercules guy. what a waste. But anyway, that's my little thing about Mary and Bert. I mean, there is something there, but I don't know. I'm fine with them not exploring that. You know, just let it be, like Blake said.
There may be something there that wasn't there before.
Chocolates, promises you don't intend to keep.
And that would make it how much more longer than it already is.
Yeah, exactly. Fitting in. Romance.
It would be like forever plus a love story. Then all the 6-year-old kids would be like, oh gosh, that's sissy stuff. So on to the kids. Now, for me, the kids aren't like, I don't know, they're kind of forgettable. I mean, apparently they're monster children, who can't be tamed.
We get implications that they are crazy, that they've run out tons of nannies before. Even Katie Nana, you know, can't handle them. Who's going to watch after the children? And Katie Nana is over
Not
them.
Mrs. Banks.
Yeah, the kids, they're a bit vanilla. We don't really see the full extent of their terrorizing, which makes me think that it's all in how they want to be treated, which is the song that they come up. They come up with a bunch of requirements for their new nanny, and they say, hey, we'll love you, nanny, if you are these things. And it shows that, you know, the nannies that had been hired for them were incompatible with how the children learned and behaved. And so, you know, I love the list they come up with and the little quips that John adds in. Like, oh, I add that one in too.
Wait, is it John or Michael? What are the
Michael,
kids'
Michael,
names?
Michael, sorry, Michael.
I'm thinking Peter
sorry,
Pan.
Sorry, you're in Peter Pan mode. My name is John. How do you do? I love their little list of conditional love for their nanny. Aw, children. But the kids aren't really that evil. I mean, you do kind of feel for them. They're not in any danger until, like, the end-ish when they, like, you know, before the chimney sweep time. You know, they kind of like run out into the slums of East London, and they're, you know, they basically turn up in Diagon Alley for a little while before Bert gets them out of there. But other than that, like, I don't really care about the children. I'm here for Mary Poppins. She's my favorite person. So onto better characters, in my opinion, Mr. Banks, Winifred, what is this unseemly hullabaloo? But you know, he plays the typical father who's you know, married to his work, basically, and you know, he has to learn a life lesson, a la Hook, a la Jingle All the Way, and you know, learns the true meaning of family. Isn't it about time? But I like this guy. He was in, I don't know, besides Bedknobs and Broomsticks, I seem to remember him from other stuff. David Tomlinson. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's in that. He's in a lot of those old films, you know? And I thought he was cool. I think he looks like a 60s Sam Neill. But I like his character. When you really get down to it, the film kind of focuses on him, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah, that's what we discover. I mean, we think at first it's going to be about this nanny, and we're slowly introduced to him, and then we realize, wow, the main focus is the dad. I mean, I don't even know if I would have recognized that when I was little, that it was about the dad. I mean,
wasn't his character based off of the author's own father?
Yeah.
And I love how so uptight and wound up they make him, because I feel like almost that same exact character in a movie today, it would almost be viewed as like a parody character, like someone they're making fun of, because he's just so extreme. Like, they come to him with their letter about what they want in a nanny, and, you know, the first thing they say is, two adorable children, and he says, oh, well, that's debatable. To his own children, to their faces. And just, you know, like, he walked into his home. He doesn't even say, hello, I'm home. He just bursts into song, like, oh, what, 601, or whatever. It's just, it's so exaggerated, but I think it really works in the context of this movie.
I agree. He's pretty nuts. He gives their list of desirable qualities for a nanny. He gives them the old Uncle Vernon treatment, where he just rips it up, throws it in the fire, you know? They will not be going. But anyway.
My dad even occasionally pulls a Mr. Banks and he walks in after work and starts just like busting that tune.
Oh my gosh. Your dad's awesome. So before this, we're introduced to Winifred, Mrs. Banks. She's a suffragette. She's fighting for women's rights.
Oh, votes for women.
Yeah, she has nothing else to do all day. Apparently, no. The funny thing is, they have so much money that she doesn't need to be doing these things, I guess. She can completely care for her children, but then that's the paradox of having money. Once you get so much money, then you start to not care for your children and you start doing other things. And so she's not involved in the children's lives. She's so into this cause that.
That's at least the rule in Hollywood, you know? But yeah, it's one of those kind of weird things, you know, a feminist who can't care for her children.
She is not a good mom.
The feminist that can't be a mother, apparently, who has no time to be a mother. I think it's hilarious. Sorry.
I really like her character. I guess y'all were saying a lot of people don't like her. I really find her very funny, just in the way she's just so kind of absurd. Like, you know, I'm off to go lead the prison women in song. I'll be back later. Yeah. Watch my kids.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find her funny.
Oh, she is funny. We don't see a lot about her, though.
Right.
And I read that there is never any scene in the movie where Mrs. Banks and Mary Poppins speak.
So maybe, what if Mary Poppins, okay, here comes a Mason theory. What if it may or may not involve a time vortex. So listen up, folks. What if Mrs. Banks is actually Mary Poppins? Do they appear on screen together?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, they do? They just never talk
to each other. Watches them all skip off to go fly the kite, but that's about it, I think.
Curious. I don't know. I think something fishy is going on there with the fact that Mary Poppins and Mrs. Banks never speak. It'd be like a murder mystery.
Well, I don't
actually
think there's
anything.
Come to
think of it, I've never spoken to Mrs. Banks. Dun, dun, dun!
I don't think there's anything for Mary Poppins to do with the mom. I mean, obviously there is, but it's the big issue is the dad. And as Mary Poppins is no nonsense, she doesn't waste her time with frivolous matters. And in this case, talking to the mom.
She never explains anything, and she does not talk to mothers. Yeah, so I don't know. I think there's something fishy there. Listeners, if you have your own theory that's better than my Mason theory, then let us know. But yeah, I don't really care either way. She's a dismissible character to me, but apparently she's... I think her performance is so good that people take offense because of what she represents. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have time for her kids. But then again, she's like Mr. Banks. Maybe they don't like Mrs. Banks because she didn't have this big catharsis moment in the film. Well, she did. She did. She gave up women's suffrage. That was another criticism, that she was like, Mary Poppins, you win. I no longer care about votes for women. Everything is happy. You know, if you read too deep into that, then you might see something there. Now, I was going to make the whole songs discussion and the scenes discussion separate, but you really can't. You have to talk about them together because even in the final cut of the film, there were a lot of songs.
Mm-hmm.
But I eventually would like for them to release an uncut version, if it would even exist, with, you know, all 37 plus songs they had written for the film.
37? But last year, you got 37!
Well, some of them are quite bigger than the others. I don't care how big they are!
Exactly.
Some of the songs are quite longer than the other ones. I don't care how long they are! Okay, so, but I still stand by Mary Poppins, because that was animation, but yeah, like, if they hadn't recut all the songs, this thing would have been like 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Forget all three extended versions of Lord of the Rings. Watch Mary Poppins. Uncut. Can you handle it? They should do a drinking game where you take a shot for every song. 10 hours later, you would be well-cooked. Basted. He's been marinated.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the scenes. So some of our favorite scenes. Obviously, there are a lot to go through. But I really like the beginning. I like the extra long opening credit sequence that we get to hear, and it's a kind of a melody of the different songs which we'll be introduced to. And then, you know, I really like this film. This utilizes a lot of painted backdrops, which were kind of superimposed onto the film. One of them being the city of London, and then as we zoom into Mary Poppins, she's sitting on this cloud, and then, you know, they did the best for, you know, 1964, but if you look really closely, you can see sort of like a circle cut around her where they kind of superimposed her image on top of it. pretty interesting to see how they kind of created these effects back in the day.
I also really like the opening sequence as well. We always, in my family, it's tradition to watch this film on Christmas Eve. And I feel like the first opening notes of that instrumental at the beginning, it's like, when I hear that, it's like, okay, it's Christmas now. It's like, it has that sort of sense of like magic to it that we see in the rest of the movie. And I think it just, like you said, it sets up the rest of the movie so well.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. That's a crazy old Christmas movie.
No, I think that's a cool tradition. I'm all down for it.
Yeah, I think it's cool too.
But it does introduce us that Mary Poppins, this is kind of going to be a quirky character. We're not quite sure what's up with her. Like we've mentioned before, is she a sorceress, a witch, or later, as we've discovered, a fairy? But she's different because she's literally sitting on a cloud, putting powder on her nose. So I like when she arrives. That's another scene where the winds have changed, and then all the nannies who are lining the streets outside, which, may I add, many of those are men.
Yeah, they were men dressed as women.
And they all blow away. And I love this scene because it's just, I'm a fan that if you can do it without special effects and it looks just as good, do it. And I don't think we would see a movie or a scene like this done today without heavy special effects of the ladies blowing away and really crazy, but they just used these ladies on wires. And I just love the way they just gracefully kind of float away. And then there's that last one who kind of has, she's like in the star position, just floating backwards. Good times.
I feel like today it would also be, you know, like in the rain and the thunder, them all epically.
Tornado.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the film takes enough time to, introduce the main conflicts and the main themes. One thing I do love is Admiral Boom. That guy is legit. Mm-hmm. To your posts! You know, at a certain hour, he has to shoot the cannon off, you know?
How many
homes has he demolished doing that?
Worst neighbor ever.
Yeah, seriously, talk about it. The HO, if you know, this was America, the HOA would be all over him. But yeah, picture an old washed out army admiral who has to fire off a cannon that makes the whole house shake. I think it's hilarious, actually. I love mayhem. I'm not going to lie. I love obnoxious characters. For I am one myself. And if I had a cannon on the top of my roof, I would totally do this every day at the same hour.
This is another crazy character and crazy situation that puts us into the mindset of you don't know what to expect in this movie. We are setting you up for craziness and unexpected and a bit of unrealistic expectations. And it's good.
Yeah. So, you know, eventually the kids meet, you know, even before Jolly Holiday, it's, you know, the classic spoonful of sugar. I remember having a Disney sing-along videotape, and this was one of the songs.
I had that one, too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a good one. I like Thea. Cool. I never figured out the bird. Is the bird an animatronic, or is it just like a matte painting where
it's an animatronic, and actually under her sleeve, she has like a whole arm of like wires on her, and she had to be very delicate in how she moved because, you know, just the slightest movement could throw all that off.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. And the bird would be like headbanging.
Well, also, she is the whistling voice, I guess you would say, of the bird.
While she's singing?
Well, no, just later added on. That would be impressive.
Also, stop motion in that sequence was done by a guy named X Atencio, who one day Walt Disney came up to him and he was like, you're going to write the songs for the Pirates of the Caribbean ride I'm working on. He was like, but I'm not a songwriter. And he was like, well, you're going to write them anyway. And he ended up writing them. But he was known for all of Disney's anytime they use stop motion. So that's him.
Wow, that's interesting.
Hard as your hoe.
You know, mm-hmm, yeah. What Walt Disney wants, he gets.
Mm-hmm.
That is the main. That is the main theme here.
In fact, we
protest. Walt Disney told us to do this episode for the podcast, and we told him no. Walt Disney, this is not animation. It's not full animation, but Walt Disney always gets what he wants. I like Spoonful of Sugar. I like the when they slide down the rails, you know. And I also like Spit Spot, dun dun, and off we go.
Well, okay, can we talk about just a little before that? And because it reminded me, when they're sliding down the banisters, they kind of take on these magical qualities. And then even a spoonful of sugar, the children are able to, you know, snap their fingers and make the little toy soldier move, and the blocks go away, and the clothes magically fold themselves. So I get really confused about, obviously I'm looking way too much into it. I'm just supposed to accept it and not supposed to question what's happening, but why?
Oh, no, no, no. We're the rotoscopers.
Why does this happen?
Hey, you're totally fine. We're the rotoscopers. We ask the hard questions about animation.
The hard questions. I mean, is it because they started having little faith in believing? Is it because she spread a little magic towards them, some pixie dust?
I didn't see no pixie dust.
Exactly.
I think they were on pixie dust for most of the movie, but that is a very interesting point that you bring up. Could it be that maybe it's one of those things where like the magic was in them the whole time, but then the kids can't pull off any magic tricks afterwards?
No, it's only when they're ever with her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's one of those supernatural channelers of magic.
It's kind of like the whole thing with, you know, the implied thing about Marion Burr. I kind of like how we don't know all the rules of her character. So it's sort of like, it's kind of up to our imagination, but then it's not necessary to that we know everything about her for the story to still work. It's kind of like the same thing with Russell in Up. You don't really know much about him at all. You get little fragments of who he is, but it's still, that's really the not knowing is what really sells you, I think.
Yeah, and Bert is a weird character too because he has magical powers in this film. He could float and fly and stuff. Mm-hmm. But is that only when Mary Poppins is around, or is he his own magical character?
I don't know. I hate to keep going back to the stage version. In the Broadway version, he definitely is more of a magical figure. Like, he pretty much, I would say, is equivalent to Mary Poppins in what he can do and things like that. But in the movie, I think maybe just around Mary Poppins, or if he is his own little figure or whatever, maybe he's a little bit more reserved with how he uses it.
Mm-hmm. Ah, a man fairy. That's what I like.
A man fairy. Great. I like that part. And then a spoonful of sugar and then all that stuff. I never understood the whole spoonful of sugar because I don't think I was a sugar cube kid. That and I never took my medicine. But
I don't think had the types of medicines that they had back then.
Yeah,
were already sugar infused and delicious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had Flintstones vitamins. I don't know what kind of medicine they had back then. We're dealing with Mary takes them out and they meet Bert, and he's doing some chalk drawings which come to life and they enter the wonderful world of animation. Sorry. So this is probably my favorite scene in the sequence of the film. It's a jolly holiday through supercalifragilistic through the storm that blows them out of the paintings. I just like it because it's a jolly holiday. It's like a funny, quirky, like fun, happy song. But when they get to the farm animals, the shiz gets real. I mean, come on. What's my favorite part? The daffodils are smiling at the doves.
Oh my gosh.
It's like comic genius.
Speaking of parts that you rewind all the time, that is one part that my brothers and I rewound all the time. We thought it was hilarious.
The singing animals part?
No, dude, the pig particularly with his...
Yeah, I think we just thought those quirky rural English accents were funny as American kids. But yeah, I really like that part. And then, they reach this little pavilion and then the penguins come out and their little song... /dance is really funny too. I really like them.
You're our favorite person.
There'll be no bill. I just want someone at a restaurant to sing that to me. I just want to not pay for the dinner. I want to go to Magic Kingdom or something and sit down at one of the restaurants and like have it be like my lucky day when someone sings that song.
I love Frank Thomas's story of I guess they had filmed it. I don't know what order they did the animation and live action. Maybe it was a little bit of back and forth, but he went back to go look at the tapes of Dick Van Dyke. And he was kind of aggravated because he was like, oh, he's stepping all over my penguins. But then that kind of led to the penguins being a bit more flexible and quirky in how we see it today. So,
yeah, because they kind of slip and slide around them, you know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like a little bit. Yeah, I think the penguins are hilarious. We always rejoice when we're playing Disney Scene It and a video scene with the penguins comes up because we love those penguins.
Mm-hmm. And going back really quick just for a minute, like you were saying about cast members doing weird things at Disney, anytime that you are in a Disney theme park, or I guess specifically Florida, and you ask Mary Poppins where her carpet bag is, she doesn't have it on her, but Mary Poppins knows that if somebody asked her this, she is to say, oh, I left it in Epcot. And if you go in England in Epcot in a little shop, there you will see Mary Poppins' carpet bag.
Are you kidding me? That's cool.
I know it.
I have to tell Shanna, we have to go back to Disney World and do that. But yeah, in conclusion, class, Jolly Holiday is my favorite sequence of Mary Poppins because it has the animation, but also has, the horse race. you know, which of course, I think Mary, doesn't Mary win that?
Yeah, it starts off with a carousel, and then they sort of just hop off
and then
the carousel.
Escalates into a fox hunt.
Yeah, they save the fox, and then she wins the race.
They don't know what evil that fox has done. Why do they just save him? He could have slaughtered a whole hen house.
So then we go into Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, which is a fun little song, which I'd read that apparently that is a real word that actually existed beforehand. They didn't make it up just willy-nilly. But it has something, there's an urban myth that it apparently has something to do with an Irish or Scottish prostitutes. Which really dampens your interpretation of this word. So I'm going to pretend it doesn't mean that.
There was a Saturday Night Live skit with Anne Hathaway playing Mary Poppins, which was kind of, you know, funny in that respect because she was with Julie Andrews in Princess Diaries. But anyway, it was in the Jolly Holiday sequence, and they kept saying supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And the kids, it was kind of a running gag. The kids would say, "What does that word mean?" And then Mary Poppins and Bert would always say, "It's a disease that grown-ups get."
Oh, no.
Yeah. There's that.
It's a good song. I personally believe that there is a flub in this song because this is one of those songs that it doesn't seem like they have a studio recording of. It's just the recording on, I don't know, maybe it is a studio recording, but there's one part where she goes, "If you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious." She like does this like, I'm not
she
even kidding.
She sound like that. She sounds like that?
She does. She does this weird like mess up, and then if you watch the video, she looks over at Bert and sort of laughs. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, like I feel this, she messed up the line, and they just kept it. It was the best take. I've never read anything to confirm this, but this is my feeling.
That's weird, because in like the tape version, I don't think she says it like that.
It's not as dramatic as I just made it. It's cautious.
No. You should be an actress, Morgan. I've always said it.
Oh, right.
But yeah, I do love supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I do not like to say that word too many times because it's a really long word.
Can you say
but
it
yeah,
backwards?
Yeah, nope, I can't.
Blake?
I can say it like they say it in the movie backwards.
Say it.
I can't. Docious ali expiastic fragicali rupus.
Woohoo!
Hmm? Yikes!
Which technically is not the way you say it backwards. It's just right. Sections of the words, like
in different order.
Yeah, exactly.
The syllables in a different order.
Yeah, but hey, that's the merry way.
That's what you call you call it syllabic inversion in linguistics. I just totally made that up.
Wow, I believe it. I buy it.
And in that scene, something that about it that I actually kind of like about it, even though it's kind of a fault technologically, is you can totally tell they're on a soundstage, especially with the grass. It just doesn't mesh with the animation well at all. You can totally see their shadows. But I don't know.
The whole movie was on sound stages.
Right. Yeah. And actually, another little fun fact here. In 2004, it was actually the same soundstage as Mary Poppins that they went back to film Princess Diaries 2. And so now that soundstage at the Walt Disney Studios is named the Julie Andrews Soundstage.
Aww.
Now, it's they get blown away out of this whole, you know, they come out of their acid trip. I mean, they get blown out of this... out of this animated world with the rain and the storm and everything, and
they take their medicine.
They go to rum punch.
That's right. Is that when they is that the go to sleep? I mean, the stay awake song.
Yes, that's that part.
I always liked that song. Apparently, that was Julie Andrews's. Sorry, Blake.
I would be okay if that part was deleted. I feel like if they needed to cut a song, that would be the one I would take out.
You know, there's always that one part that you're like, well, when you're watching this at home, this is like, well, this is where I get a drink, you know, or this is where I go up and use the restroom. The part in Robin Hood, Love Goes On and On, that is definitely the get up and use the restroom part.
Well, if the Sherman Brothers, if it was their goal to write a lullaby that really did put children to sleep, they succeeded because it is very slow.
Especially, yeah, I think it's kind of weird that it's in there because Feed the Birds is the exact same setting almost. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right before bed. She's singing them a song. It's almost, you know, literally the same scene, just a different song. So I just think that's kind of odd almost.
But way better.
Nightly performance.
Right, way better. Much better.
Stay Awake was apparently Julie Andrews's. It was her favorite song that she wanted to sing. And so it took quite a few takes, like something like 47 takes for her to get it right, you know, just to get it perfect. But So a little bit of trivia there. I always thought when I was a kid, I understood the sarcasm of it at an early age. And so I liked that song, or the irony, I guess, of the song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the film actually did have an intermission in some countries.
Really? Hmm.
Yeah. In fact, if you look at the DVD version, there's like a special feature where it shows the card, the intermission card. Hmm. Rightly so, because I mean the movie lasts forever, you know.
Yeah. Well, they wake up in the morning and then.
Oh, and then they go to Uncle Albert's house.
Exactly.
Uncle Albert, who is who does his voice? Edwin.
Edwin.
Okay, I love that guy. And I love Uncle Albert. For one, I love to laugh. And for two, like, this is just, this scene is just so ridiculous because everyone is, like, laughing so hard and they all float when they laugh. It's just the craziest thing.
And all and the then, jokes are so hokey and so corny. Do review-ish, but it's hysterical. I still laugh at them every time. And if I were to probably choose an individual Disney scene from any movie that I love the most, it would probably be this scene.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well.
It just works. It works.
It does work. I think it's really cool. For the scene really illustrates how intense and really into her job Mary Poppins is. She doesn't even, like, giggle in the scene. And I'm, like, on the floor, like, having convulsions. But, and then she even brings them down a notch, literally, pun intended, by making them cry. I don't know. I just think it's funny, the whole laughing hysterically and then crying right afterwards. Like, poor Uncle, I want to say Uncle Waldo, but that's not his name. Uncle Albert, like, having the time of his life laughing his head off, and then he just starts crying and he gets brought back down and stuff.
The contrast.
Who would have thought that? Now, here's the thing. There's more laughing. The whole laughing makes you feel so elevated and better thing comes back at the end with the bankers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with sinister consequences. But is that an extension of Mary Poppins' magic? Or is that... Because it, like, revitalizes the old man. So is that, like, how did that... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Uncle Albert was already on the ceiling before they got there.
That is true. Forensics did make that evident. But I don't know, it's just kind of a confusing thing because the whole laughing mechanic seems to affect the old banker guy. What is it, Mr. Dawes Sr.? In the end of the, in the kind of the climax of the film, I guess, although there isn't really a climax. But yeah, I don't know, it's kind of a funny thing, this whole Mary Poppins magic.
The world will never know.
Until they make the prequel.
And I guess while we're talking about this scene, there's the dog to consider too, because they can kind of like, he's the one who fetches them to go get Uncle Albert, and they're, you know, she's able to be like, oh, I know what he just said, so let's follow him. You know, where does he work into things too?
The dog is clearly an animagus.
Oh, I forgot about that little dog. Hey, and he is, isn't he wearing like a sweater?
Mm-hmm. Aww.
He predates, you know, people are like, oh, you know, dogs wearing clothes, that's so lame. But, I mean, he did it first.
He did it first, and Mary Poppins likes him, so how dare you, is the end of that sentence.
There we go. I'm done talking. this scene, actually, so have you seen the play?
Yes, it came to my city about 3 years
Lucky.
Ago.
Lucky. It's not on tour anymore, darn you, Mary Poppins, and I missed it. Oh, I like want it to have another revival tour because I really want to see it.
It's really good.
But this is not in the...
Yeah, they cut it out. I was kind of upset about that because I was kind of looking forward to how they would do that with... I mean, obviously, you know, it would be wires and stuff like that, but they do play around with wires in there. I mean, there's one scene where Mary Poppins literally flies over the entire freaking audience and ends up in the last balcony. It's like just stuff like that. I think, you know, I've seen Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and Mary Poppins, and I would probably say Mary Poppins was my favorite out of those three.
So how do they resolve? Because this scene, as inconsequential as it seems, mm-hmm. you know, the laughter, and then they just sort of move on, it plays a key role in the ending of the film with the banker dying of laughter. So
in
how
the
do
murder
they...
of Mr. Dawes Sr.
Thank you. So how do they work that? Do they change the ending? Is it a different...
Mr. Dawes Sr. is not even really a prominent character. He's definitely not. He's more of just like a banker boss who makes an appearance in the first act. He's not really a consistent. And he's definitely not, you know, the crotchety, you know, hunched over old guy that he's in the film.
Yeah. Oh, that's that.
So that is that.
So the children, they go back, and then they're talking to their dad, and they're telling him all about being crazy, amazing things, and he's like, no, this is not going to happen. What is Supercala? What? No. So they say, tomorrow, you're going with me to work, right?
And what kind of punishment is that? I'm an extremely busy man, and as punishment, I will take you to work with me.
But she kind of plants that idea in his head, though.
Yeah, which is genius. She knows that exactly every move that she does is calculated.
That is true.
And so they sing the Feed the Bird song right here, which happens to be Walt Disney's favorite song. Mm-hmm. It's been said many times with the Sherman Brothers, he would call them into his office, you know, everyone had left. And he would kind of look out the window and he would just say, play it. And they both knew that he wanted to hear them play and sing Feed the Birds. And that was his favorite song. And to me, that just makes the song that much more tender because it is a good song and it has a very good moral to it, which the children realize and attempt to capitalize on the next day.
Mm-hmm. And apparently there's this really cool story that I like on Walt Disney's 100th birthday, Richard Sherman performed this song at Disneyland at the dedication of the statue of Walt Disney and Mickey Mouse that they have in front of the castle. And so Richard Sherman is on the piano in the hub, crowds around him, he's playing Feed the Birds, and a single dove in the middle of the song comes down and sits on his piano, and then at the end of the song flies away. Unplanned, unscripted.
Yeah. I remember him telling that story at D23.
Wow.
It's kind of like, mm-hmm.
But pretty cool.
That's nuts.
A single solitary bird.
That reminds me of the movie Bernie. Have you ever seen that, Morgan?
Mm-mm.
Oh,
should I?
If you were in Texas, you have to see that movie. In fact, it was probably filmed in places that you were.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but anyway, a side note: go watch Bernie. It's with Jack Black. But the single bird, the solitary bird, is remind me of that. Anyway, feed the birds, and then there's the whole fiasco at the bank.
Well, they want money so they can feed the birds.
That's right. That's right.
And then they go to the bank.
That part always scared me as a kid. I would always fast forward it. I don't know why.
Yeah, they give him a tuppence and he wants to invest it. Or, you know, the dad wants him to invest his tuppence in the bank. If you invest your tuppence in a bank account. And he doesn't want to. He wants to feed the birds with it, and he kind of starts making all this ruckus, and then people are like, oh, they're not giving him his money. And so they think that there's, you know,
this bank's busted.
Yeah, so they all start calling their money, and then so a run on the bank happens, which...
And then all of London is in the bank at the same time.
Oh, yeah, and they all happen to be walking by the bank and entering the bank. It's a bad situation. And so, you know, then Michael gets scared, and he runs away. They run into Bert, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they kind of end up in like a Diagon Alley kind of place.
Diagon Alley.
No, not Diagon Alley. What's the other one?
Nocturne Alley. That's right. Sorry, Nocturne Alley. Ugh, I'm such a muggle. Yeah, Nocturne Alley, and then they get semi-abducted, but it's actually Bert. And so yeah.
It's not a creepy image at all.
So yeah. And so Bert's like, oh, you poor children, I'm going to take you up on the roof of London. Long story short, Bert has to take care of the kids. And so what does he do? He takes them up on a bunch of roofs through chimneys. And then, I think I really like, the song, you know, the when you're with a sweep, you're in glad company.
I requested to play this song in orchestra for like 5 years.
Really?
And I was all ever since seventh grade, because we had the same, our orchestra teacher in seventh and eighth grade also was an assistant director at the high school. And so from seventh grade through 12th grade, it was always, Chim Chimney, let's play Mary Poppins. And it never happened. But I thought a Mary Poppins medley would have been the coolest thing to play. Just saying.
We can contact Make-A-Wish Foundation and have them have your old school play it for you.
No, I don't want to listen to them play it. I want to
play
it.
Oh, you want
to play
it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And apparently I already had my Make-A-Wish wish with my Catchin' Fire.
That's right. You only get one Make-A-Wish wish, so yeah, you're done. Sorry. Yeah, I like this. I love Step in Time. I thought it was Stepping Good Time for the longest time. But yeah, it's Step in Time. I thought it was really cool. Of course, Admiral Boom has to ruin the show by at the same time save it by blowing all the chimney sweeps up with fireworks.
And I love his flabbergasted face when he sees what's going on. He's like, "Arr."
We're under attack.
So he gets the same idea that that Mulan had with Shen Yu. Let's blow them up with fireworks.
Well, so what I like about this song is that this is one of those like never-ending songs. Mm-hmm. It starts with Chim-Chimini. It kind of goes into Stepping Time. Stepping Time has a long, long sequence of just, there's no words for the most part. It's just dancing.
Stepping.
And then, yeah, they're stepping, exactly. And then it continues into the house as they go down the chimneys and enter the house into the Banks' home. They are not impressed and not happy.
And the incorporation of the other themes from the movie in while they're all in the home, I think that's pretty clever as well.
Which ones?
I know you get a little bit of Sister Suffragette. I'm not sure if there's any other one.
Oh, okay. You mean musical themes, not like...
Right, yes. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, because they're carrying her around and she's like, "Votes for women" at some parts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they do. And then they start marching with her. Yeah, they all come together.
And the different things that they say for Stepping Time, like, "It's the master!" And then they go, "It's the master, Stepping Time," whatever.
Oh, that's a good song. And then, so, Bert stays, right?
Right, mm-hmm. With Mr. Banks.
And do they talk? Can't remember.
Yeah, yes. They have a little heart-to-heart.
And does he respect him? Mr. Banks, meaning.
What is this, an interrogation?
I'm...
yeah, I think it kind of gets him thinking, you know? But, of course, the film always has to have it come down to the dynamic character who has to make his choice at the, you know, at the very last second, you know, at the most critical moment. And so, there's kind of this, like, period of reflection for him. And then Mr. Banks is at the bank about to be reckoned by the bank board. And, he's humiliated and about to be thrown out. You know, he's ordered to give a statement, you know, "What do you have to show you for yourself?" And then supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
And I love how he can't even get it out of his mouth. And he's just already so, he's tickled with himself.
Yeah,
he's already giggling.
I love how his punishment, like when they fire him, basically, they punch a hole through his bowler hat.
Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, "No, anything but that."
They show you.
It's like, who does that? "You're the worst rancher this place has ever seen. Give me your hat." Punches a hole in his hat.
But,
pretty effective. If it ever rains, you know, it's going to be a little leak.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that was the point.
And then it takes Mr. Dawes a while to process the wooden leg named Smith.
The joke. A wooden leg named Smith. And
there
this...
is a death off screen. But yeah, Why isn't that in the Parents Guide on IMDb?
Parents Guide, there's an off-screen.
But I want to know, does he just die mid-air
death,
and then just fall to
one.
The ground? Or how does that work?
Yeah, how exactly did he die? Apparently, because all it says is that he died of laughter or died laughing. A couple things. Heart failure, it would be the most logical. He could have laughed himself so high that he fell, and trauma resulting from the fall was what killed him. Because he's kind of an antagonist. You know how they are with Disney antagonists falling to their death. I mean, hello, people.
Do we really have to figure out how exactly he morbidly died?
Yes, we do. Our listeners are chomping at the bits, remember? Asking about this. I don't know. The point is that he died. I think it's a little morbid, but it does make... You know who actually killed him was actually Mr. Banks. If he hadn't told the joke, he wouldn't have laughed. If he wouldn't have laughed, he wouldn't have died or whatever. And then Mr. Banks wouldn't have conveniently become the junior bank manager.
Or did Mary Poppins know he would tell the joke? So
my
she
gosh.
Had a secret plan the whole
She's
time.
She's an assassin!
This goes all the way to the top, folks.
Have y'all seen that horror trailer where they like made out Mary Poppins on you? I forget what it's called.
Scary Poppins?
Scary Poppins, man.
Scary Mary, something like that.
No, yeah. Mary Poppins. That's the only reason she came down here. It wasn't to save Mr. Banks. Mm-hmm. It was to assassinate Mr. Dawes.
It was blood money. It was blood money, folks.
Man, I'm looking at this movie in a completely new light. Bloodthirsty killer.
Even in the next scene, it kind of still was a little morbid because they're all, gathered. You know, they don't know where Mr. Banks is. He's been gone all night. And then I think it's the cook that says, "Check the river. It's popular with jumpers."
That's right. Parents Guide. There's an allusion to suicide. Actually, I think that's in there already. But So yeah, I mean, that's a little dark, but I mean, I think it's kind of one of those times things, like a different time, you know, a different period. I mean, whatever. It's not like ruffling my feathers. I'm not going to call for a boycott. Right.
So Mary Poppins
check this
goes
out.
Home.
And she does. Everybody goes and flies a kite up to the highest height. Real quick, a note that you can do about Dick Van Dyke and his horrible accent. I have here some citations. Here we go. Fondly remembered for the film, but his attempt at a Cockney accent is regarded as one of the worst film accents in history.
What?
Yeah, 2003 poll by Empire Magazine of the worst film accents of all time. He came in second.
Mm. Oh, see, I think it's very endearing now. It's just Bert.
Apparently, Sean Connery is the one with the worst film accent ever. As Jim Malone in the 1987 film The Untouchables, which I don't really know what it is.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Well, they're saying Sean Connery's the worst because whether he's in The Hunt for Red October or an English King, he's always got that Highlander accent. Brad Pitt was number three. Of course he was. He speaks the same in every role. I need to go eat some food. But anyway, yeah, so Mary Poppins leaves. She just, like, comes and goes, you know, but she comes back in the books. But it's really sad because she's like, well, my work here is done. I need to leave. There are other nasty children out there that I need to save. Other Mr. Bankses that I need to save.
Well, the family's been mended, yeah. So, I mean, right. I know the children are sad that she's leaving, but shouldn't they be happy that their family is, like, back together and has their priorities straight? You know, they're probably going to see a lot more of their parents now, which really is the better situation.
True, which is why I believe that completely ignoring Mary Poppins and just running outside to go fly a kite is permissible because Mary Poppins isn't the one that they need, you know?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. They just need each other.
They also need Julie to turn them, you know, from a household into a family. I think she does that. And once she does that, she knows, you know, any time I stay here, it's time wasted and just got to move on.
Mm-hmm. Next big adventure.
So basically, the real reason why I love Mary Poppins so much and why it's probably one of, if not my favorite Disney movie ever, is because it's not just a good movie. It is a good movie, but then there are so many different layers to it. First, you have a good movie. You have good songs. You have engaging characters. There's always something to look forward to later on, all throughout the whole movie. There's never a point where it gets to, you know, okay, I can stop watching now because the rest of the movie's not good. The whole thing is consistently scene after scene, song after song. You enjoy it the whole time, even though it is kind of long. And then you have this next layer where it's kind of the message, you know, why, you know, what's the story that Disney's trying to tell in here? And obviously it's, you know, about Mary Poppins emphasizing the family aspect that this group of people really just doesn't understand. And then that's where most movies stop, I feel like. You have a good story and then you have a message to it, and that makes a great movie. But then with this one, it goes so much further because it wasn't the last movie that Walt Disney worked on, but I feel like it's his last really big project. It was made in 1964. He died in 1966. And I just feel like it has animation, it has music, it really has everything that he learned over his career, and it's in one movie. Like, this is Disney. And I love the Blu-ray trailer for Mary Poppins that's coming out in December. The trailer says something like, this is the film that defines Disney magic. And that kind of is a little, you know, hokey or whatever, however you want to call it. But I really do feel like that's what this film is. It really embodies Disney magic. Like, this is quintessential Disney as a corporation, and also I feel like it's quintessential Walt as a person. Mm-hmm. And then it, like Mason was saying, it shattered box office records and actually it funded the construction of Walt Disney World, which opened in 1971. So quite literally, no Mary Poppins, no Disney World.
Sad.
So I just feel like, you know, it's such a huge film to the Disney legacy on all of those different levels, and that's why it really is. It's Mary Poppins is Disney to me.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
I'm glad that her legacy still lives on, especially in the parks. I think there's some movies, especially from the 60s. I mean, you don't see the characters from Bedknobs and Broomsticks. You don't see, you know, Hallie and Annie or Sharon and Susan from The Parent Trap. You don't see these, like, especially the live-action characters. You just don't see them in the parks. Yeah. But she is the one, and Bert are the only two from that era that still live on.
Really? Yeah, you see Bert at the parks?
At all. Like, I'm glad that you brought that up because it kind of relates back to what we were talking about at the beginning with why are we even discussing this on an animation podcast? I think it feels so much like an animated movie, and even Disney kind of views it that way. Like you said, like Mary Poppins and Bert are really, maybe aside from Jack Sparrow, the only non-animated characters that you ever see in the park, mm-hmm. ever. And I think that just stands, you know, really the imprint that it's made.
Yeah, I wanted to be Mary Poppins this year, but like with every Halloween, like 3 months before, 3 or 4 months before, I have this miraculous idea of this amazing costume. And I'm like, I'm going to make the costume. It's going to be awesome. Then I forget about it. And then I think about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we got to do that. And then I forget about it. And then here it comes 3 days before Halloween. And I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah, we don't have time to make a Mary Poppins dress. So next year, that's my plan. I want to be Jolly Holiday Mary Poppins. It's going to happen.
Excellent. Bring a gaggle of penguins to do your bidding.
Aww.
There be no bill. But yeah,
that is your dream in life.
Should not have the bill. Should be our tagline for the episode. But yeah, this is a good movie, and that's really cool. Like, I never thought about the legacy of Mary Poppins like that, so... that's really interesting. Now, Saving Mr. Banks, excited, yay or nay?
I am actually really excited. Truth versus fantasy aside, I'm excited for it. I know a lot of people are kind of like, oh, they're not going to remain true to what happened, or they're going to depict Walt Disney in a certain way. I know my sweet mate here at school is determined that they're just going to depict Walt Disney as like this sort of like Santa Claus figure. And I feel like the first clip that they released last week kind of does, you know, he walks in, he's like, oh, hello, Pamela. I feel like they'll do a good job, though. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this movie. Ever since I've heard just that there was going to be a Walt Disney biopic, I just was really excited. And that's
at least a little bit of his life.
Yeah, the fact that it's around this Mary Poppins era of his life is exciting. I'm interested to see what characters from Mary Poppins, because it's kind of around the making of Mary Poppins, but I'm interested to see if maybe there'll be a wannabe Julie Andrews making an appearance or some of these other characters.
There is.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Maybe they'll do like they did with Jeff Bridges in Tron and just make a creepy CG younger Julie Andrews out of the real Julie Andrews.
There we go.
And she'll be like Tron Clue evil Julie Andrews. I'll just do it anyway. I'm a little bored with this movie because biopics aren't like my favorite genre, but I'd like to see it because I'm interested in Disney animation. I mean, I'm interested in Disney history. Well, the movies that this is definitely Oscar material. Like, I think it's probably gonna win it. Because movies that are about movies about movies win Oscars all the time. Last year was Argo. It was a movie about a movie. The year before that was The Artist. It was a movie about a movie actor. You know, and so the Academy loves films like these, I suppose. And so, this will be interesting. But yeah, you never see stories like this on film. And so I'm sure it's going to be quite a show if they thought it was important enough to make a film about it. I think it was on the Hollywood Blacklist, which isn't as bad as it sounds. It's like an unofficial list of really popular unproduced screenplays.
Oh.
And I think this screenplay was on that list. And so this idea has been around for a while, I suppose. But it'll be interesting. Tom Hanks, my view on Tom Hanks will never be the same after Captain Phillips, but...
Oh, Captain Phillips.
We can't let him attach that ladder!
Although I do feel that in this movie, Tom Hanks, from what I've seen, I mean, I saw a few clips at D23, and I'll see it in a few weeks, but it just feels like Tom Hanks playing Tom Hanks. I don't get the Disney vibe from him as much as I would
like.
Yeah,
because you've seen the old spots before a VHS, you know, film where Walt Disney's talking, and he's like, you know, welcome to Tomorrowland, blah, blah, blah. You know, spectral magic, and he's talking and explaining things. So we know Walt Disney's voice,
right?
So I don't know. Maybe a criticism some people will have will be Tom Hanks's portrayal of Walt Disney. what if they do this thing like it's like a trivia thing where they're like, Tom Hanks for this film, he on purposely did not listen to any actual recordings of Walt Disney in order to keep his role as unbiased as possible.
And also, I'm curious as to how much of the film's music they'll incorporate in there, mm-hmm. or even how they will do that. Because I know Thomas Newman is doing a score, who he also did Finding Nemo and WALL-E. So they'll have that same sort of vibe. And as far as like what songs they'll use, or even if we'll hear like, you know, rough versions of the songs, or even like, you know, some of those, however many, 37 unused songs, if some of even those would be in there. So
I wonder if people, if like hardcore fans will recognize them. But I think the film is more about him securing the rights to Mary Poppins rather than rather than making the film, because it wasn't like a deadline issue involved, or like there was no drama with the production crew. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I am definitely curious about this film. I'm not like super excited about it, but yeah, I'd probably want to see it.
Okay, before we rate it, I asked a Twitter question like literally 10 minutes ago, so we don't have that many responses, but I thought I would read them. I asked, who is your favorite character in Mary Poppins and why? And we have two responses. Woohoo. And Dylan says, probably Bert. Quirky as he is, you can't really have a Mary without him. They're stepping things up. Hashtag step in time, step in time. And then Jordan M. says, I'll probably go with Poppins herself, since she is perfect in every way. She is quite the original and the best super nanny. And that's it. That's for all the questions that I have. Maybe I'll.
Don't you love it when we do that?
Okay, so what would you guys rate this film?
What would I rate this film? I'll do 4 stars for Mary Poppins. It's a tip top in my book. A couple boring parts, like even as an adult, but I mean, it's that doesn't make it a bad film. I mean, all in all, it's like super solid. It just doesn't get a perfect 5 for me. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I love the characters. I love Mary Poppins. I mean, who can't love her in this film? And some really cool Disney magic going on. And so yeah, 4 stars.
I'm going to have to, I feel like this is really best of the best. I can't think of another movie that really embodies why, what makes Disney Disney as well as Mary Poppins does. So I'm not like the kind of person that says like, oh, every movie, that was the best movie I've ever seen. But I really do think Mary Poppins is one of the very few movies that I would give 5 out of 5.
I feel the exact same way. 5 out of 5 stars. Very iconic, very Disney, very magical, very fun. It has everything you want in a great Disney film. It has songs, it has music, it has wonder. And this is one of my go-to Sunday movies. That, you know, Sunday's more of a relaxed day for me. It's either Parent Trap, Mary Poppins, or Sound of Music. 2 of the 3 are Julie Andrews. I think one of the reasons it's so successful is because of her role and portrayal as Mary Poppins. And it's just near perfect. And I never get tired of watching this movie. Now, ask me when I was little. I literally got tired watching this movie. But now I don't. So 5 stars.
Thank you.
Yahoo!
Ain't it a glorious day? Right as a morning in May. I feel like I could fly.
Now, Bert, none of your larking about.
All right, now we are going to jump into the voicemails.
Well, hi, I'm Jacob Street, and I was just calling with a quick question. I love Mary Poppins so much, and I'm excited to see the new movie, Save Mr. Banks. But I'm a little concerned. I think they're going to portray Disney exactly how Disney, the company, is going to want to have their head person portrayed. And so I was just wondering, like, does it bother anybody else that we would probably be seeing an entirely different movie if Disney wasn't making it? Or do you think Disney's going to portray him accurately? That's all I had. Thank you.
It's true that Walt Disney is, you know, unless you're a total cynic, you know, he's generally regarded as sort of a god among men, you know, kind of like Steve Jobs, but, you know, with Disney animation. I've read in a few reviews that he swears a couple times in the movie and he drinks and smokes, you know, which he did in real life. So I think they're going to go for a more realistic kind of biopic look, but at the same time, they're not going to defame him in any way, because that would just be counterintuitive, because it's a Disney film, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. I don't know. Tom Hanks is a great actor, so he'll pull it together.
I think we've never seen anything like this done before. And especially, I think, because it's from Disney. Like, I remember when it was first announced, I was like, wow, I can't believe they're, you know, this is just so out of left field. But at the same time, it's like, I'm so glad they're making something like this, because it's just, it's completely uncharted territory.
Aloha all, this is Dylan, or D. Barenzu, or the Darn D, off of Twitter and no other places. You were asking how Mary Poppins did as a film. I think it's absolutely incredible. It's one of those films that really dives into how an adaption really should be, and it goes well beyond it, too. The animation and mixed media all around it is really pristine. The songs are really unforgettable. I mean, who can get Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious on their heads? And all in all, it's a great film. I need to see it before Saving Mr. Banks comes out, because that comes out within the next month or so. And I have to say that, you know, it's something that every Disney fan needs to see sometime in their life, if they haven't seen it already. It's what makes the medicine go down. That be it. Sayonara.
Okay, I'm going to read a few emails that we received. Blake and Mason aren't here. They actually had to leave, but I want to read these because I think it's important. So first one says, hi, my name is Ryan. I just wanted to say that I love the podcast. I've been an animation fanatic since I could comprehend what a cartoon was. I grew up studying animation by reading books and watching documentary/behind-the-scenes footage. I wanted to be an animator, but unfortunately that didn't work out for me. However, I'm still a huge animation fan and love Disney, especially Pixar. It's nice to have an outlet such as this website where fans of animation can come and learn things. It's also really fun to listen to the podcasts and hear all the info and comments for movies that I absolutely love. The conversations you guys have remind me a lot of the ones my friends and I have when we get together and talk about various movies. So I just wanted to say, keep up the good work, and I look forward to future podcasts. P.S. You guys should think about doing a podcast for The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's one of my absolute favorites. The story is great, the animation is fantastic, and the music/score by Alan Menken is pure genius. I feel like this movie is an underrated classic from the Disney Renaissance time period. I think this would make for a very interesting and very informative podcast. Just a suggestion. Ryan. Thank you, Ryan, for all your very, very kind words. Glad you like the show. That's one thing that I love about our show, is that, like, even me, as one of the hosts or one of the writers, I can still go on the website and talk with the other fans, and I can interact with them, and it's really a community that we are building and building up every single day. So thank you. As for The Hunchback of Notre Dame, that is one of the most requested that we get, surprisingly, and I think it really goes to show how much people really do love and adore this film within the animation community and the Disney community, even though it's so, I guess, underappreciated and forgotten by most everybody else. So we'll definitely put that on the list, because that and The Lion King are probably one of the most requested that we get of the Disney canon. Now, of course, we have to spread those out because we got to do the other studios and give them some love too. But yeah, we'll definitely look into doing that early next year. All right, the next email comes from Rich. He says, hi, ladies. I was writing to ask you to do a podcast on the new Broadway-bound Jungle Book. The new production is opening in Chicago later this month. And this email was actually from, I think, September. But I have some gossip I can share. The sets for this production are incredible. The director is doing something so fresh with it, much like what Julie Taymor did with The Lion King. Most of us Disney fans are aware of the Aladdin production coming, but this show is something that should be on everyone's radar. Richard Sherman is even involved bringing in some new material. They're also incorporating cut songs, etc. Again, the design for this show is stunning. I would love to hear your take. I've only seen the sets, but would love to hear if your people in the know some other details such as costumes and effects. Thanks, Rich. Well, thank you, Rich. So we will probably talk about that when the new Diamond Edition Jungle Book Blu-ray comes out, which is in February of 2014. So we will keep that discussion until maybe our Jungle Book episode, because I think that would be most relevant. But if anyone else is listening and they know a little bit more about this production, the costumes, the effects, maybe you even saw it, definitely send us an email and let us know, because I'm a bit unaware of the inner workings of this production and where it's going. So if you know, send us an email and we will read it. And so that way we can let Rich know and everyone else about what's happening with the Jungle Book Broadway musical. All right, the next email is from CJ. She says, hi, Rotoscopers. So to keep this short, I shall jump right in. A few years ago, like 2010, I was on IMDb and found this animated movie called The Clockwork Girl. And I began scraping for trailers and release dates, but found none. I still can't find any, but there is some more behind-the-scenes footage. I was wondering if you've heard of this movie and if you could tell me anything you know about it. Thanks a ton. Keep up the fantastic work. CJ. Okay, so I know absolutely nothing about this movie, and like you, Googling really isn't that helpful. So this is another call to our listeners out there who may be a bit more in the know on The Clockwork Girl. Do you know about this movie? If so, do you have the inside scoop? Let us know. Send us an email. That way CJ can know, and then we can learn a little bit more about this movie and what happened to it, if it's still going to be, if it's not going to be, whatever. So definitely send us an email at therotoscopers@gmail.com, And let's get to the bottom of this. Next email is from Ryan again. He says, I just wanted to send over a suggestion. I noticed that you guys give recommendations and things in your podcast. Sometimes you'll mention various websites, trailers, or other things you've seen on the web. I think it'd be great if you could put those links in the show notes. Another thing, I think it'd be cool if you guys could do a podcast reviewing Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I know it's not 100% animated, but it does have some great animation in it and was a technical breakthrough for the time it was released. I think it'd make a very interesting discussion. Keep up the good work, and I'll be looking forward to listening to more podcasts in the future. Ryan. Thank you, Ryan. So actually, since Ryan sent this email, I took it to heart, and I have tried to be much better about including the different links and videos and things that we're talking about, including those links in the show notes. So thank you, Ryan, for letting me know, because I've definitely improved, and I hope that you've noticed, because I've tried to be really good about it. So as for Who Framed Roger Rabbit, well, I think we've opened up a can of worms with Mary Poppins here being the first technically non-animation movie to review, even though it totally is animation, but it's kind of not. Yeah, so since Who Framed Roger Rabbit is in the same vein, I think it's definitely fitting for us to do that movie at some point in the future. And so just keep your eyes peeled. All right, last one. This is from Corey. Hey, Rotoscopers, I know that you're planning a Simpsons episode, and I cannot wait for this Simpsons episode. I would also like to suggest that you do Avatar The Last Airbender / The Legend of Korra episode. I would love to hear your opinions on these shows. I have heard you mention these two shows on your podcast in the past, and it would be awesome to have an entire episode dedicated to my favorite animated TV show. Thank you, Corey L. All right, so we've had a lot of requests for this. Like, mostly our podcast, we focus on animated films for the most part, and today broke another rule, I guess, and we did Mary Poppins. But one of the things we've been covering on the website is we've kind of slowly been breaking into TV news and discussions, and The Legend of Korra is one, basically the number one TV show that we cover. So it's sort of inevitable that we will be covering that in the near future. I've talked with a few of the writers. Chelsea and Mason really don't watch it, but I do. I watched the original Avatar The Last Airbender and loved it. I'm a huge fan, even more of a fan of Korra. So I've talked to a few of the writers about potentially doing an episode on one or two of those. I'm thinking with like Legend of Korra, you might have to wait until all the seasons are over, right? I don't know. So, but definitely that is something we want to do. So thanks for the suggestion, and get ready to see it in the future. Thanks, Corey. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and thank you to Blake, who joined us. It was a magical, fun episode. So thanks, Blake.
Absolutely.
And thank you for requesting this movie. I don't know if we necessarily would have done it as soon as we did now if it weren't for you. So very, very cool. So where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm at Old Dirty Blake. There's a long story behind that name, but that's what it is, Old Dirty Blake. Or on my blog that I've had for about 10 years now, blakeonline.com, or, of course, on Rotoscopers, writing about Disney and Pixar news.
And WDW Radio.
Yes, and WDW Radio. I have a travel column on there about implementing Disney magic in everyday life, just sort of like practical things like that.
Yeah, his articles are really cool on there, so definitely go check them out. I'll include a few in the show notes. Speaking of show notes, as if we've been talking about different things and quoting different, you know, clips and movies and YouTube videos, or we mentioned like this article or that article, just go to the show notes, rotoscopers.com/54. That's where you can find everything about this episode and all the links. You can find all of Blake's stuff. You can find Mason, me. As for me, I'm Morgan Stradling on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me at Mason, SMTX, on Twitter. Yeah.
And also, if you want to stay up on all the latest animation news and reviews, be sure to go to rotoscopers.com. That's where you can find all of our social media profiles. And obviously, one of the best things is the community of people who are involved in the comments. And you can find fellow animation addicts like yourself and join in the discussion there. Till next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Blake, I'm Mason, by the way. I don't think I've ever really talked to you in real life.
I don't think I have either. It's nice to, quote, meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. I've already done my research. I Googled your name, and I'm looking on Facebook. So far, I have you dressed up as Buzz Lightyear with Jessie, the yodeling cowgirl, yodel-odelay-hee-hoo, and that's about it.
That's all you need to know, really.
Okay, I'm looking up arrest records right now in Providence, North Carolina. Let's see, Blake Taylor. Okay, what do we got? Excessive celebrating during a Disney film at the Providence IMAX Theater. You were an actor in The Haunting in Connecticut.
Oh,
you enjoyed your work then.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Your signature drink is the pink lemonade. You passed away 3 years ago. Actually, you passed away in 2002. So I'm sorry to hear that. I'm just Googling all the Blake Taylors.
Oh.
And trying to make him uncomfortable. He was one of the very first to be caught and fired.
We can't wait to get to the main discussion, and I know you guys are all like, gnawing at the bit. Wait, what is it called? Gnawing at the bit?
Om nom 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 nom.
I don't think that's the right term.
No, I think the correct
chomping.
The correct term is, I thought it was nomming at the bit.
No, chomping at the bit.